choices, options are there. So as we start doing our planning, I want us to keep in mind two things. One is that public trust is at the core of all that we do, and that the most important principles of open government are transparency, integrity, and accountability. So with that, let's start with old business. We have minutes from our November 3rd meeting to be reviewed and possibly approved. Has anybody had the opportunity to review that?
Chair?
Yes?
I move approval of the November 3rd, 2022 minutes.
Second.
Thank you. So it's been moved and seconded. Any additional discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Is anybody opposed? Okay, excellent. That motion carries. So next up, we have new business, and item A on our agenda is the presentation of the OGCHRC investigative report. So as we prepare to discuss the report, I want to make an observation. And my observation is that the information that's alluded to in Section 4 of the investigative report is concerning to me. And I think all of the issues noted in Section 4 are worth exploring, but I'm especially concerned about the reference to public records requests and the questioning of IG employees about the investigation. And to be transparent myself, I'm just a little worried that we don't have all the facts about office operations that we'll need to get to the heart of the matters as we discuss the report. But that being said, I'd like to hear from each of the committee members about their reaction to the report. Putting somebody on the hot seat, can we start at one end and go to the other? Mr. Hefner, are you willing to go first?
I don't have much of a reaction at this point, as it's sort of written in a summary fashion.
Okay.
And I'm sorry, you said your concern was what?
In Section 4, Section 4 of the report talks about some additional information.
Specifically, though, public records requests?
My particular concern was public records requests and OIG's management's discussion with and questioning of its employees regarding this investigation. But there's some other things in there as well, and I don't think any of them are not without interest. You can see the others are office management, morale, and just a general other employee concerns. And so what I took from this paragraph was that in the request we made to OGC to do the investigation, it wasn't broad enough to include a further exploration of these items, and I put out there that that maybe has merit. Is that fair, Shauna? Do you want to add anything?
Yes, through the chair, I know that paragraph is very vague, and we did that by design. OGC was tasked with there was an employee resignation with some complaints made. We were tasked at the last meeting with finding out if there were any allegations to investigate, and if so, to investigate those allegations. We did discover there were some allegations that were worthy of investigation, which is what we did. During the course of that investigation, some other noteworthy issues came up that we thought would be of interest to either the Inspector General or the committee. We thought should be mentioned in the report, but we didn't want to do it. We didn't explore those issues in detail. They were outside the scope of this investigation. So we certainly didn't want to put partial facts or in a form that was incomplete. So we left it vague, general topics. No, maybe these things could be discussed with the Inspector General. Maybe they don't need to be investigated, but they were just issues that were noted by the investigators, areas of interest that may be worth consideration, maybe even by Mr. Russell.
For me, based upon the way it was written, because it's vague, I felt my impression was that there was no need for any further investigation. Otherwise, that would have been stated, and I think more detail would have been provided. So that was my impression of 4. I will state that I thought the staff response was very important. I think it's if you've ever worked in a large office, it's very difficult to get multiple people to agree on anything, much less sign a letter that I think emphatically supports what's happening in the office. And so for me, the response was very telling in a very positive way. And so that's what I focused on, was the response, which I think indicates a very high level of management, and then as a result, very high level of morale in the office itself. So I don't have any further concerns based upon the report or anything else I've seen.
Thank you.
Thank you. Terrence Freeman as well. I concur with the others or so. And I will hold my peace on that to get further in the discussion.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will also concur with the commentary of the Chief Judge's representative and say that I believe this committee has a process of quarterly meetings and reviews well established for a reason, and it's an opportunity for these committee members to hear from the IG representing staff concerns, reports, the process under which they work, he works. And I will say that as a member of this committee, obviously I was part of the process that made a change not that long ago. As a functionary of this government, somebody that interacts with all the departments, many of the departments that the IG and IG staff work with, I will simply say that what's represented in the staff's letters as a testimony of morale and function is reflected in our department's interactions with the IG. So from where we were to where we've gotten already with the recent change, it was good to see the staff expressing what I can tell you we perceive on the other end of working with the Inspector General. So with that, I'll conclude.
Thank you. Mr. Henry?
Just going to echo some of the comments that my fellow board members have made, particularly Judge Taylor, and her comments in regards to the staff response. I thought that was definitely added some clarity in terms of what the ultimate investigative report made and how the staff had an opportunity amongst themselves to really kind of respond to some of the comments that were made. I'll save some of my questions like towards to the meatier part of the meeting when we're kind of talking about some of the points that were made from Sean in the report, but regardless of that, I think we're in a world's different place from where we were about a year and a half ago. And all of us kind of probably have some scar tissue in terms of dealing with that different period in where this office was. And I've appreciated some of the reports that the IG and some of the staff members have been able to produce over the course of the last couple months. They touch on areas that I like the fact that they've covered, particularly when it comes to contract management. Hopefully we'll be able to see some of that in addition in future reports. But ultimately, I think at the end of this meeting, I would like for us to be in a better place in terms of possibly bring some finality to the original questions that we posed to OGC, and we'll be able to move forward.
Thank you. Mr. Schmidt?
I concur with the other comments regarding the section and then the letter signed by all the staff and also the Director of Investigations' response to Section 4 as well.
Thank you. Anybody want to add anything else? Okay, so let's talk a little bit about the findings in the report. Henry, did you want to go first? You mentioned you had some questions.
Yeah, that's okay with everyone else, unless someone else has questions. I think the only real question I had was, Sean, can you add more clarity to when you were talking about on page 3, the City Directive 528 requires supervisors and others responsible for city employees to observe and be informed about reasonable suspected incidents, possible harassments, and reports of such incidents. Can you add more clarity in terms of when you talking to Mr. Rassell, how you came to the determination that that directive wasn't followed, because that part was a little fuzzy.
I didn't talk to Mr. Rassell. We had two attorneys and two members of the JHRC did the investigation. And then, so I can.
Shalom, I'm sorry to interrupt you. We wonder if there could be a microphone for you, because we can't hear you very well. And I'm worried also about the tape. It'll be able to pick up your saying.
Yeah, mine would fit.
So I can. Is it on? So I can have you hear from the investigators to give you the facts from the fact finding.
Good afternoon. My name is Ariel Cook. I'm one of the lawyers at OGC. So if I understand your question correctly, how did we determine that Mr. LaSalle didn't comply with 528? Is that a question? So the evidence showed that the complainant had reported her concerns on more than one occasion to Mr. LaSalle. Mr. LaSalle agreed with that. That was in dispute. And the evidence also showed that it was never reported as is required by 528.
So is in 528, so I'll lean on your expertise. In a similar situation outside of Mr. LaSalle, does 528 provide any degree in terms of when that report's supposed to be made, when an employee makes that type of complaint? Does the supervisor have an obligation to try to remedy it first before it's placed, or do they have to make the record and then try to remedy it?
So I can read you directly from the policy 528. It's actually quoted in two places, reading from page 3, the second paragraph on page 3 of the policy, supervisors and other responsible city officials who observe, are informed of, or reasonably suspect incidents of possible harassment must immediately report such incidents. And then on page 4 of the policy, in the first full paragraph of that page, the second sentence reads, the manager, division chief, or department director has a responsibility to immediately and confidentially notify the city's Office of Equal Opportunity, Equal Access, and the Employee and Labor Relations Division of the condo.
And then the only other question that I had is, when it came to the interviews that were made for the report, did the investigators get the sense that some of the staff members had the opinion that was made in their letter that they sent to us outside of that? Or because you guys were limited to what we had given to you to investigate, that wasn't part of the review that was made?
So you're asking, basically, when we spoke to the employees, was the impression we got consistent with what they put in their letter?
Yeah.
For some, yes. For some, no. Not at all.
Did you have any other questions? Mm-hmm. What other questions did the other committee members have?
Who were the ones that said no?
Through the chair. I think all of the staff is present, so if you really want me to answer, I will answer, but as an employment attorney who's laser-focused on potential retaliation, it makes me a little bit uncomfortable. But if you want me to answer, I will answer.
Okay.
Thank you. Any other questions?
Yeah. Okay. I want to drill down on that for a second. So, given an opportunity to be one-on-one with you, and you are receiving some contradictory is there additional material worthy of investigation based on one-on-ones that's not representative of a collective response?
I don't believe that there's... I don't want you to think that there's some cloud over this office.
There won't be if
is
depending
it,
on the answer.
Is it
yes
or no? Investigation? No.
Okay.
I think at most, if I can just get right to the point, your question, you're worried about public records.
Yes.
At most, there's a need for some training, in my opinion, on public records. I have no concerns over any violations or anything that was done wrong, but at most, a need for training. Other than that, no, I don't see a need for additional investigation.
Thank you. The purpose of the question was to get the answer, which is, if in an individual environment where there should be no fear of retaliation, there was something expressed that is deserving of additional investigation, that would be much different than what you just said. But in that environment, if there were expressions of actions that, as a manager or someone advising the managers, is perhaps Mr. LaSalle and the entire staff should get a refresher or a more in-depth review of existing directives and policies, that's always appropriate. It's something I often advise to folks. So I just want to get that clear. Thanks.
Were you going to add something? I was giving you a moment.
Look, if you just, I want to make sure that my colleagues agree.
Of course, we can take a pause.
And then I have a question as well.
Excellent.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Yeah, it's okay. Just wait and see where it goes.
Yeah, the answer is no.
Thank you.
That was your question. And then Mr. Henry said he had a follow-up question.
So based on all of that, in essence, the best way we can move forward, I know there may be some things we can't say, is it's simply just based on us recommending to the IG that he and other staff members just get a refresher on policies and sunshine rules and ethics, and that would cure what you found? Or should we be asking him to do that?
Yeah, I believe that additional training is in order. Yes.
Does anybody want to ask a question? I have one, but I can defer. Can you talk a little bit about the scope of the additional training? I heard you say regarding public records, so that was one. And then in my estimation, training around City Directive 0528, which we discussed a little while ago, would also be pertinent. What other training would you and your team recommend based on your discussions with people in the office?
Nate, to the other representatives, I might be able to refine that. Have you, employee services personnel, the folks that sort of guide that training, have you had any interactions with them about the report and findings?
We have had some discussion with employee services.
So do you think there would be an opportunity based on it being really focused around training and refreshers on all of these items to work with them and let them work with the ethics director or HRC to... I'm trying to get you off the position of having to identify employee training when we actually have people that do that.
Absolutely. That's a great idea. the biggest thing that we noted is maybe a need for public records training. Okay. Certainly, but then whether we need a refresher in 528 is could be dealt with employee services at the committee discretion.
Thank you. Mr. Freeman?
Thank you so much, and just a spectator on the outside watching this now and sitting at the table brought to the inside. And forgive me, ma'am, but you don't have a name plaque in front of you, so I do not know how to refer to you, but just in your comments that you made, and Mr. Hughes did a great job of really bringing that back in, because that led to several questions that I was going to follow up with. But the simple question that I would like to ask is just, given your previous statement and the statements as well from others, with the additional training to protect the city from any future, because you used the word retaliation, I believe, and so that perked my ears up. And you know, we kind of have a couple things going on the city council side, so I have a lot of things coming at me, but when I start hearing things like that, I just want to make sure that we're in the best posture moving forward in any decision that, you know, I'm fortunate to be a part of that protects us moving forward. So based off of what you put on the record earlier, and then what was clarified through a follow-up question by, and I need glasses, and I'm sorry, I don't remember the name as well, but we work together often, I should remember them. And Mr. Hughes, I'm just asking, will this put us in the best position for the training?
I'll defer to Mr. Granite.
Yes, Council President. The best thing the city could do is require further training. The city has a duty to do something when discrimination is complained of. It has a duty to act and investigate, which it did. And if there's a finding, which there was, it has a duty to correct the problem and take some action. And installing training is taking some action to ensure that the problem doesn't happen again. That's sufficient. And I think that additional training will ensure it doesn't happen. And that will certainly protect the city.
Thank you.
Sorry. Mr.
Henry? There's just one thing. I think Mr. Samuels kind of addressed it already, but it was like one thing that caused me a little bit of heartburn in the letter was when he said that, however, I will allow male employees to close the door if the matter is personal. If the matter is personal and involves a female employee, I give that employee different but equivalent options. And then he goes on to say, if this policy is determined discriminatory, I will alter that approach to conform with the city's policy. So I feel like I kind of threw that, but that was the one thing out of everything that kind of struck out at me as possibly bad, but I wasn't sure if I was reasonable.
So that is a discriminatory policy based on gender, and that policy should stop immediately, and it's discriminatory.
Okay, thank you. And I just had a question through the chair to our council. Is there going to be any action on this, or is this merely a presentation to bring the facts out and a recommendation to us? I'm just trying to kind of find where we're at in the agenda and how we're moving forward. So there will be action on this that we're talking about right now? As I don't see it here on the agenda.
Hold out that it's possible that the committee may decide to take some action. What that looks like, I can't say. Voting on training might be something. Voting on something different may be another.
And the only reason I ask is I have a funeral that I have to attend here shortly, and I know Mr. Hughes is leaving as well, and definitely want to make sure that all my questions are at desk and those here would answer. And I didn't want to leave this commission just by hanging if there were going to be a vote before us on this issue.
So, thinking about your question and knowing that Mr. Hughes also has another commitment, I imagine that possible paths forward are continuing this discussion and seeing where it leads us. We could table the discussion and come back to it in another
meeting. Can I offer a motion? Is that what we're looking for? Well, if it's okay with this body, it seems as if that seems to be the legal advice given from the council. It seems like here in the lines of questioning from the commission that I'm in disagreement with this. So I will make a motion that we accept the recommendation from our general counsel to Mr. Hughes, you got to help with the term, employee services to come up with the proper level of training to ensure that any acts like this are prevented from happening moving forward. And if that's not the right legalese term, if you could better help me with that, I greatly appreciate it. And I would be the second for discussion.
I would second the motion and maybe ask for a clarifying point on empowering the chair to, after this meeting, discuss with the employee services staff rather than dissect it today. I think Ms. Coder could speak to some of what she can do and help facilitate in other areas of the city government with the follow-up training, or we could empower the chair to just work with her to do the follow-up.
And I would accept that amendment to the amendment.
As we're starting discussion, I had a question I was going to ask of the OGC team, which might help me know where I sit with the motion, which is, can you speak to the facts that were discovered that led you to include public records in the section 4 in the narrative? Are you able to say something about what those things were?
Let me try to relay. As I told you, I wasn't the fact finder. Let me try to relay at a high level what the concern was, and if you want more specific facts, Ms. Cook can give you more specific facts. But the issue in one particular case was there was a requester asking for certain information, and I believe that the most senior members of the Inspector General's office come from the federal government, where the public records are handled in a different way, and they're not as open as in the state government. And in Florida, it's just, they're withholding them is the exception. And in this case, the records were given. There was no problem. But I think in the process, there was, it just led us to the understanding that there was just a need, perhaps, for more training. I know that we have good training in OGC on an explanation of public records and the pitfalls and possible consequences of not complying to a T with certain public records laws that have to be followed. I just had an example of one case where we just had maybe some hiccups along the way, but ultimately the records were provided.
Madam Chair, may I ask one question?
Absolutely.
Mr. Rennan, do they handle public records requests solely within their office, or are you or your office there as a resource for them to go to? Because public records can be complicated. They're not always easy.
The office handles their own requests, but we're always a resource for legal questions for the Office of General, for the Inspector General's office. They always have a legal contact. It used to be me until this investigation, and then I had to get that chop up because of a conflict. And now they have John Phillips as their go-to attorney to ask any legal questions they have.
Madam Chair, if I may.
Please.
To clarify, as I said during my interview, and as I'll say now, the public records request in question, the The request came in on an active investigation, and as you know, active investigations are exempt from public disclosure until they're filed and submitted. The case in question was Collie. It's a public record. When his attorney made the request, the case had not been disposed of yet, meaning it wasn't published after the attorney had it. The attorney asked to look at the case file. I said, come on to the office. You can look whatever you want. He said, can I have copies of that? And I said, absolutely not. And I said the same thing today. It wasn't a question of public records violation. It was me telling the attorney, absolutely not. An employee heard me say to the attorney, you cannot have copies of that, not knowing the context of which request was made, which was outside of the scope of what is releasable. It was an active investigation. I would say the same thing to the same attorney today. As I explained to the attorneys when I was questioned, at the time the request was made, I didn't violate anything. Now, I came in today with two options. Either one, just keep my mouth shut and whatever was said, and I take it back and we do all the training you want. But there's a lot of things that occurred that you don't have all the facts on. And, you know, as you've seen by the letter from the employees, that I had no input on that whatsoever. I didn't know what was happening when they did it. I think the office is leaps and bounds from where it was. The allegations that have been made in the last 3 months have been hell in the office because we've pushed so hard to regain our credibility, to regain, you know, our purpose in the city. I think we're doing that. So to have this type of a report come out and it being in the paper and all those other things, knowing factually that the things that have been discussed and things that are being alleged are not accurate. The morale piece. I can't imagine morale being any higher in any office in the city. I mean, the public records request. Yes, it came up, and yes, I said then, as I say now, there was no public records request violation. I'll be more than happy to do the public records training again if that's what's going to, you know, move this forward. But I would like to move forward. That's the bottom line.
Thank you. So, Madam Chair, if I could just clarify, Mr. LaSalle did not say that in his interview. When we asked him about the public records request, he declined that he had ever given an instruction to not provide documents.
No.
There was no discussion of the case that he's referencing. And I already confirmed that there's four of us in that room interviewing him, and we all have the identical notes and memory of that. So I just want to clarify that for the record.
Thank you. Does anybody want to comment?
The clock's running. I get it. Confused.
Yes.
I just want to make sure the posture is just in the right, in the proper manner. All right. So as we're operating here, we're all working through you to avoid the crosstalk. We've had Mr. Selman make a comment that was very convincing, and now we've had our Office of General Counsel contradict that. And so we have two different stories out there, and we're about to take action now. And I'm not sure if I'm comfortable taking action. I have two stories competing against each other, and I'm not quite sure how we get to this point. And this is where we're at. So it's a little disappointing, a little frustrating, because Madam Chair, I do feel that if we yield the floor to Mr. Lasell, he's going to contradict that. And we know between two stories, in the middle lies the truth. So I'm going to rescind my motion and maybe ask you, Mr. Hughes, come on, you're so good at wordsmithing, but is there a way that we can get these stories to align and get us in the proper posture to get the training, whatever the recommendation is needed, so that the stories, when it goes out in the paper, is showing that we as a city, we take issues serious, and we really are willing to move forward to make sure that we ensure the public that we have earned their trust and maintain integrity. What are the chairs to use? What are your thoughts on the process moving forward?
I'm still where I was by seconding the motion. Whatever this back and forth between OGC and the IG is, I restated to verify its factual is fact. Regardless of the circumstances of this discussion about public records and the process, ultimately public records were provided. You believe that there's a learning opportunity for both the IG and staff in the public records realm, but the legal threshold of the public records is met, correct?
Yes.
So there was not a violation of public records rules and laws. There was a consideration of how that was done, and OGC's position is done one way and could be done better, and the IG's position is done appropriately. Nevertheless, the legal threshold was found. So perhaps in the environment of training, with a de-escalation of this, there can be an additional conversation so that the parties arrive on a no wiggle room agreement on what it what actions should be undertaken and when they should be undertaken.
That's correct. I think we have to say, though, based on our investigational findings, there was evidence of a lack of complete understanding of Florida public records law that would benefit from additional training. I have to say that.
That's clear. I mean, there's clearly a misunderstanding between the two parties. One thinks it was done exactly right, and the other says there's room to grow. Ultimately, this committee has to review and make findings and deal on a quarterly basis with the performance of the Inspector General. If you were back in front of me and in some small amount of time and said that disagreement about how to process them continues and the law is very clear, then that would be a consideration at that time, especially if in that interim there was the additional opportunity of a training environment to further explore this misunderstanding. I think that would be compelling. But in the process today, what I'm most focused on is the fact that the lawyers for the consolidated government of the city of Jacksonville say that ultimately the law has been followed and that the process of getting there has revealed this misunderstanding. Correct?
That's fair, yes.
Madam Chair, is that the floor?
Yes.
Well, thank you so much for that. And so I was definitely quick to draw, and you can't. When we have an amendment before us, we have to handle what's in front of us first. So my first amendment, our first motion is still in place with Mr. Hughes' amendment added to it. And we're still in the discussion mode, so I just wanted to put us back in the proper posture. I'm turning my mic off and go with whatever you say.
Okay, thank you. But I welcome any further comments you want to make. I think I might be back where I was when we started, which Mr. LaSalle said we don't have all the facts, and that's kind of where I started. I don't know that we have all the facts, and I still have some discomfort there. I'm trying to get to peace with what you're sharing with us about the level of concern, but I still have, I don't know, an interest or desire in learning more about the findings that are referenced in Section 4. So I just want to go back to some mm-hmm. of the concern.
Madam Chair, if I may, Ms. Lehoff, based upon what you said, in terms of your impression of the answers given by Mr. LaSalle being different than what was stated today, not making any determination whether, you know, that was accurate or not, but given what you said, do you still feel that training is sufficient to remedy the situation that you felt occurred based upon the answers during the interview?
Do I think training is sufficient to address the issue?
Yes. Based on your impression that you indicated was different than what Mr. Hill said today.
Yes, I think training for everyone would be helpful.
Right. So whether we take his version or OGC's version, whatever it turns out to be, or somewhere in the middle, training is the answer. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I think training would be very helpful for everyone in the Office of the Inspector General. Okay.
But nothing further you feel is necessary?
Just to be fair, I don't know what that would be, and that's not really... So our function is just to get the information to the committee and let you all do what you feel is best. So I don't know that we have any further recommendation of any action that needs to be taken.
Okay.
Would that be a question better directed to our colleagues from Employee Services?
I'm getting trouble. So it has been this has been an irregular over a year. But ultimately, what led to Mr. LaSalle's firing was this committee doing the job that it's empowered to do, which is to review the circumstances of the performance of the Inspector General, take in inputs of information, and make a determination. It is not a typical role. There was a circumstance that everyone felt appropriate to empower OGC to look at a very specific employee complaint. And information is in this report very clearly about that. In the circumstance of looking at that, there was also a question raised about how they handled public records. However, we now have on the record that there was no legal violation. We have an employee services department that can help facilitate with the ethics department, any ethics training, with HRC staff, anything related to equal opportunity laws, with OGC. They could facilitate working with OGC, additional sessions related to state public records laws. So the idea of, I'm very much opposed to the notion that each time we meet and hear something, we are going to outsource the decision making somewhere else. We took in the information, we've reviewed the information, we have a very clear no legal violation and a very clear report as to a specific employee allegation and how that should be handled and move forward. And we have a recommendation in general terms that there's exposure, that some additional training because of different past some of the employees' past reactions to other governmental functions that are different than the state of Florida being brought into that training. So I'm not sure what we would be empowering anyone else to do. If we've heard those facts stated as such and are in a general agreement to the motion that's been seconded that empowers employee services to facilitate with the Inspector General all the appropriate training that's been discussed, I'm not sure what else we're doing.
I think we're at the point where we just vote, and any additional discussion we can have in regards to Ms. Lizoff's performance can just be the evaluation process. I think that's where it's more germane. And at least from what the information I'm hearing from everyone as part of this discussion, the most appropriate course of action is to deal with the training and to see how that is conducted, ultimately with the chair being however like the motion was made to talk to employee services to ensure that's completed. I'm not sure what else we can do, but I think that at least is a first step we can mark off and get accomplished and then move on with the agenda.
Can I hear from any other committee members?
The only other thing that I would say is that he certainly can or he cannot. We've heard a response from the Inspector General related to one issue of the public record, but I don't know if he would care to respond to the board generally or not.
Seeing how my first comment went, I probably said not. Yes, I think we'll just go with the proposal for I welcome all training opportunities. They go enhance our capabilities as an office.
On a clarifying question, are we as a committee empowered to authorize retraining only for Mr. LaSalle as the Inspector General or for the entire office?
I'll have the entire office do it.
Thank you for the question. I was going to suggest that the Inspector General himself go on the record.
Yes, we'll all do it.
Does anyone else want to make a comment? So we have a motion, and can we restate the motion just for clarity, and then I'll ask for public comments, and then we can take a vote.
It was amended. Mr. Houston, you share.
Nice.
I don't know if I'm restating it, but I'm basically restating it. Anything you don't like, Council President. What I heard was a motion to charge the Inspector General with a series of training sessions facilitated through the Employee Services Department. And If the chair wants to be empowered to ensure with employee services that that process is underway, calendar fulfilled before our next meeting, the motion would empower her to do that, and that employee services will further explanation empower facilitate training through their own office where it's appropriate. Work with OGC if there's OGC-specific training that IG and employee services think is correct, and the chairwoman can have input on that. And with the ethics department, if employee services can help facilitate, and the chairwoman thinks that's appropriate.
Couldn't have said it better myself.
Thank you.
And I'm not a lawyer.
So now we have a motion that's been moved and seconded and restated. Thank you. Before we vote, let's call for public comments. You can have 3 minutes, Mr. Nooney. Let me get my timer going when you get up to the podium.
Just public comment on the motion.
On the motion specifically. Thank you, Mr. Nooney. Mr. Nooney, did you hear that specific direction?
Yes.
This is public comment only on the motion before.
Sean, could you let him have the mic for the record? Sorry, John. Take time.
All right. My name's John Nooney. Name and address continues to remain on the roster. You know, if this is a motion, you know, really to, you know, send everything back to ethics, you know, it, let me just say, you know, ethics is gone. Our charter's been gutted. You talk about public records. I mean, look at the sign-in sheet. I'm the only one on it. I don't know, maybe there's, you all filled it out, and I was late to the party, so I have to apologize. And then here, I don't know who filled this thing out. You know, on the agenda. But usually, you know, you'll have members, you know, listed. So, you know, this all, in my opinion, you just goes to the heart of public records. You know, and right now, you know, public participation. You know, the reason I'm up here is, you know, gosh, you recognize public participation before a vote was taken. That doesn't happen in the Jacksonville City Council legislative committee process. It used to happen in 2017, once there was a piece of legislation that would allow Joe P. Public, you know, to speak before a vote is taken. But it's gone. It's out the door. And, you know, you can ask Carl. You know, when she was leaving, I asked her, you know, what happened to it? Well, it was an interpretation by OGC. So here we are, interpretations. You know? And so, anyway, you know, according to Carl, and if, please, you know, but, you know, back to the motion, what you're talking about here. Ethics, your charter, the public trust, boom, out the door. But anyway, you know, the only one, from my understanding, that can restore the public trust in Jacksonville right now is the Attorney General or State Attorney of the 4th Judicial Circuit. So anyway, I just wanted to speak, to have all the ethics training you want, but then at the same time, you know, it's pretty gut-wrenching, because I'll tell you what, I've been crushed, threatened. I can't begin to tell you what's happened to me and my family. You know, because all you do is try to speak up, make things right, or bring some attention, you know, to a scenario, and then you can just get, boom, crushed. So, anyway, thank you for allowing me to speak. I mean, God, made me better right about this one. All right, thank you all for listening.
Thank you, Mr. Nooney. Does anyone else want to make a public comment? I see no one. So we have a motion on the table. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Is there anyone opposed? Okay, thank you. Thank you. So next up on our agenda, I have asked for an update on reaccreditation.
I believe you were a volunteer.
Oh, I think you can. I think I'm sitting right next to the mic or to the recorder. Okay. I'm sitting right next to the recorder. I think you can hear me.
Can everyone in here register the sound?
Thank you, Mr. Hughes.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, as requested to provide you an update on the accreditation process. You recall the last time we met, I'd asked the committee's opinion as to whether or not they thought accreditation was worth pursuing. And resounding yes was the reply that we got. It was never a question of whether or not we were going to pursue accreditation. It was just what were your thoughts based on the practicality and the costs associated with it. So that being said, we've decided, based on input from the committee and others, full force, full blown ahead, seeking reaccreditation. We are set formally to be reaccredited, or to actually have the team come in for the purposes of determining reaccreditation on August 8th. So 2 months prior to that, approximately 2 months prior, we'll have what's called a mock assessment, where folks from the same outfit will come in and give us an assessment, basically to see deficiencies prior to the real assessment. So that will occur 2 months, ballpark 2 months prior to that. Right now, we have a new accreditation manager who's been appointed, and during the course of the last several months, she's probably done the vast majority of the work towards accreditation. So I'd say we're probably about the 90 percentile in terms of being ready. I promise by the time the mock comes along, we'll be in fantastic shape. The bulk of the process is looking at the standards set forth, and then finding proofs within our organization that we've actually met those standards. So finding proofs is during the whole accreditation process, which goes back 3 years. So finding proofs from investigations and other things that have occurred in the past 3 years is a little bit of a challenge administratively, but we're certainly meeting that challenge. I don't have any issues in terms of, or any concerns about what the status will be come August 9th.
Thank you. And congratulations in November.
That depends.
I'll let you know August 9th, the day after.
Okay, thank you.
Anybody
have any questions for Mr. LaSalle regarding the reaccreditation update? Okay, so next on the agenda is a discussion of the Inspector General evaluation process.
I have some thoughts about that. I can start unless anybody has a question. So, I was thinking about one of my first meetings, coming to this committee meeting. I was coming from the Ethics Commission, and I had never experienced a meeting before. We were very quickly charged with evaluating the previous IG. And the format that we followed was that we got a self-evaluation, and then we discussed it as a team, and scored it, and voted. Is that what you all remember as well when we were there? And so, on reflection, I wonder if there isn't, and I think we've talked about this in another meeting, if there isn't a better process out there that would get us some more information to do the evaluation. And so my thought was to appoint a subcommittee of the members of the committee to come back with a recommendation about what the evaluation process might look like, perhaps even kind of checking in with some of the other IG offices in the state to see what process they use, and consider perhaps coming up with some interview questions for staff in the office or peers of Mr. LaSalle, so we can get a more robust and well-rounded sense of Mr. LaSalle's performance before we're tasked with doing the evaluation. So having said that, what are your... I know he's not leaving because of what I said. He has never been there. What are your thoughts about that? Can I have some feedback, comments?
Are you, for this potential subcommittee, are we starting from scratch, or are we starting with the evaluation? I don't know what to call it, process or procedure that was already created.
So if I understand your question correctly, it's an excellent question, and my vision was that the tool that we currently have, which I think is in your packets, is likely going to meet our needs. It was more the process, like what could we do to evaluate Mr. LaSalle's performance other than just hearing from him feedback about his performance? What more should we be doing as a group to make sure that the evaluation is fair and balanced and thorough? Does that answer your question? Did I understand it correctly?
Yeah, it does, because I think in the past, the way that the committee committees kind of handle it is that we get this big binder that has the areas in which we're supposed to score, and then at the end of it, the score is calculated and that determines the number. I think the only additional thing that I think we should probably try to incorporate, although we had some difficulty trying to figure out, at least in my mind, how it would best be done. I think it was discussed when we were doing the interview process, Mr. LaSalle, was at the first commission, commission meeting when you were IG, where we kind of discussed how we would be able to kind of probably do like a climate survey of like the staff, mm-hmm. To always provide them an opportunity for them to kind of see how they feel.
Right.
But there was a question in terms of how you appropriately do that within an evaluation process. So that's the only other thing that I think would be cool to include, but open to anyone's thoughts on that.
Thank you. Other thoughts or comments? When we were talking with Turner, you gave me the idea that perhaps the subcommittee could get some advice from our unemployee services team about best practices as well. But the people I knew from employee services are not sitting there anymore, so I don't know if anybody is.
So, do you have any thoughts on that?
No, other than my request would be that it be no different from any other employee in my position in the city. You know, if everyone else is subjected to the same, that's fine. If not, this is what the standard is for the city right now, and this is what we're following. So if it changes for me, is it going to change for every other person like me?
Can you show me what you're showing me? Like,
it's just the standard. This is mine for the shoes I started to fill out, so it's halfway finished. It just has the goals and objectives the same as I think.
Oh, okay. Yes, thank you for this.
That'd be my only request, that if it's going to change, then change it citywide. If not,
I want to make sure I'm understanding you, so I might ask you a question. Let me think for just a second. I think you make a reasonable point. I have supervised employees before, and part of the evaluation process isn't just they give me a self-evaluation and I say, yes, that is right. I work in a hospital, so I talk to the unit manager, I talk to peers, we have peer surveys, we have ongoing conversation. Like, there's a lot that goes into an evaluation, and I imagine that that is true of other employees in the city, that it's that multiple factors are taken into consideration when a person is being evaluated. So I'm not necessarily suggesting something that is unusual or uncommon, but more what would be more thorough for us to get a great picture of the office. Thoughts?
Well, I think your point, and correct me if I'm wrong through the chair, is that this would be the way it's done throughout the city.
Yes, ma'am.
For any head of a department, so to speak, director, whatever it may be.
Correct.
And so I think we're dealing with a more global issue. If this is the standard in the city, I'm not sure that we're necessarily empowered to change it. And now that Mr. Hughes is gone, he probably would have known that answer. So this might be something we need to table until the next meeting and to get that additional input. But I think I appreciate your point that if this is the standard within the city,
correct,
I don't know that we're empowered to change it just for you.
That was my concern. Yes, okay.
Great points. I wonder if it's within the scope of my role to maybe talk to Diane Moser and ask her, is what I suggested possible? And if it is possible, then someone with better knowledge of the Sunshine Rules could help me figure out how to communicate that back to the members of the committee. Can I, through someone else, send an email asking who would be on the committee?
And I think that's
like that.
What we have to be cautious about communication.
Right.
Because a subcommittee may not be an appropriate method of communication for this group. I don't know. I don't know the answer to that.
I would imagine being publicly noted.
As long as I know
you're looking at
it. Right. But then you start talking about a lot bigger process. So it may be better initially for one person, is my point. to take that lead to find out what we're really empowered to do before we go down this road.
Then I would be more than happy to do that, representing the committee, and talk to Employee Services, maybe even talk to Mr. Brandon again, and come up with a carefully considered recommendation that takes into consideration the feedback I got today. Because I do feel like my other thing was carefully considered, but maybe now I have more information.
What is the evaluation need to be completed by?
I think that we were expecting to do it in April. I did read the ordinance. I think it's in the ordinance that says something about the spring. It's more loose. Oh, that's not it. If you indulge me for a second, I have the ordinance here. Sorry. I think it says the spring. Do you know?
I don't.
I found it. I'm sorry. It was two pages, and I thought they were back to back. So it says, don't quote me, but blah, blah, blah. It says, the committee shall on a yearly basis evaluate the performance of the Inspector General based on criteria established by the committee. And it says, the committee will review the proposed annual. Oh, it only says the annual budget is every spring. It says on a yearly basis. So a yearly basis. So once, can you interpret that as once a year, and we don't have to be like held to April? Is it? Well, I mean, I'm in favor of doing it as reasonably quickly as possible.
Yeah, I think we've always tied it, at least because you did it last time. I think we've always tied it around the same time at which we would discuss salary adjustments, because it's tied to the entire city. Mm-hmm. So our evaluation would determine what that amount would be. So the closer we get to that same time frame, I think it makes the most sense.
April 28th is the deadline for budget. Okay. So if there's any...
So my homework is to follow up on this expeditiously.
Through the chair, I believe on the evaluation and the first couple of pages, it does state April, so that would be something that we would have to change then.
It has the...
It does say April that his evaluation needs to be conducted.
Oh, it does refer to the cycle as from March of 2022 through March of 23, so that's the period of time we're evaluating on. But I imagine you know, and if it does need to be adjusted, we can do that. So... If I'm summarizing correctly, my homework is to get with Employee Services and with possibly Mr. Brennan from OGC to determine what is possible from the perspective of the evaluation that's aligned with what other leaders similar to Mr. LaSalle currently experiences in evaluation, and then quickly pull together a subcommittee if that's what we decide to do, or call a meeting of the whole committee and we can hammer it out together.
Yeah.
So that we have a process in place, and then hopefully it's a process that we can adopt moving forward.
Yes, because there's certain things that he's and Mr. LaSalle's entitled to based on his employment.
Yes. I absolutely want to be where we start talking about being fair and transparent about what we're thinking. Any comments or questions? I don't know that this is something we have to vote on. It seems like just more of a discussion and something I'll take action on. Do you agree that it's not a voting kind of thing? I do.
No, I agree. I think if we're going to change the process, we probably should vote on it at that point, but I think the exploration is fine.
Okay, I appreciate that. Anybody want to add anything else for me to consider? No, excellent. Thank you. So now we're moving on to item 3. Any other business? Any other business that is important to the committee or to the IG's office that you want to bring forward?
Yes.
Okay.
Ms. LaSalle, I think you talked about this when you came to the True Commission a month or two ago, in regards to the report that you did on contract oversight.
Yes.
You had mentioned that there was a pending ordinance that would kind of do a global cure on the procurement code for the city. Do you know where that is? Because I know that was at hold when we last discussed.
And I believe it still is. I wish President Freeman was here, because Ms. Cumber was the one who was heading that. So I don't know what it stands in terms of how long or where it's at in the process. but she was the one who was introducing that legislation. We're talking procurement, or are we talking about grants? Because it's two different pieces.
Okay.
Yes, the procurement piece was being rewritten, and Ms. Cumber was leading that charge, so I don't know where it's at.
Okay. And then the only question that I had in regards to grants, because I don't know whether that is addressed in the report, at least from my skimming, is there a system that the city uses to kind of keep track?
There is.
All right.
They have a grants compliance office, and legislation recently introduced is enhancing that office and adding additional body to provide more oversight of grants based on one of our reports.
And then were you guys able to talk to the outside contractor that the city has used for at least the federal dollars it's received? Is that, I'm sure, I couldn't remember if one of the contracts that you guys audited had to deal with some of the federal dollars that we received. Either through the American Rescue Plan.
Correct. I would defer to Mr. Samples, but I don't think we have spoken to any outside contractor as it relates to that.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else? No, that's fine. Okay, we're back to comments from the public. So I have a comment card for Mr. Nooney. Give me 1 second, Mr. Nooney, and I will get the timer going. So now you can have 3 minutes.
Hello, my name is John Nooney, and thank you for the opportunity to speak. You know, again, I just have to get back to public participation. And, you know, believe it or not, I'm working with the state attorney, or the attorney general of the state of Florida, and also looking forward to working with the state attorney of the Fourth Judicial Circuit. You know, if there was a part on the thing, you know, calling for witnesses, God, I feel like I'm going to have to call all of you. You guys are awesome. I mean, you make the case right here, you know, just for restoring the public trust in the Jacksonville City Council Legislative Committee process. It's been eliminated. And I got dozens and dozens and dozens of examples. And, you know, there's nothing more frustrating than, you know, not being able to address concerns or bring suggestions into our elected legislative representatives. Now, still, you know, Kevin Carrico is my District 4 rep. You know, still haven't gotten nothing back from him. And then you got your 5 at large. You know, I'm still working on that. But these are separate issues. But let's get back. You know, you had the Charter Revision Commission. You know, Wyman Duggan was back then. You know what was the result of that big Charter Revision Commission? The restoration of ethics. Ethics had been taken out. Then we got Lindsey Brock. You know, and then as far as the Inspector General, remember Tom Klein, and we had James Hoffman, then Lisa Green. You know, and now we have Mr. Matt here. You know, 2022-0188. You know, I spoke, you know, during the appointment. It was buried in the agenda. Under agenda 99, you know, I hadn't even met the guy. I felt sorry for him already. In that, you know, the way, you know, they just did that. I mean, it's just, it's tough. So anyway, all I know is you all have the power to restore the public trust in the Jacksonville City Council Legislative Committee process. Please do that. And all it is just allowing the public to speak before they vote. It's not that hard. But we're getting crushed. So thank you for listening. What a great meeting.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening.
My pleasure. Any other public comments? Okay, hearing none, we're up to adjournment. So I want to thank time and their attention, and I hope you have a lovely day and a lovely weekend. And so the meeting is adjourned 4:30 p.m.
Thank you.
Thank you.